on the subject of taking care of business. That's what this guy does. He's Tim McAuliffe, host of Tim and Friends. He did some business this week. Timmy, thanks for doing this, buddy. How are you?
TCB, a little taking care of business. I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing very well, and I see you flexed your muscles. You brought one of your OGs back to this country, one of the Score originals. You brought him to Sportsnet. Cabby is back.
Yeah, I wish I had the wherewithal to actually make that flex, but I was just honored to be a part of the announcement that he was back in Canada, and super excited because, like, and as a fan and as a dude, like, he's just a very good human being, and to have him on our team is very exciting. So very cool to have a dude that I worked a ton. We started as interns together, I believe, in 1999, which is even crazy to say. Maybe it was 2000. But to have him back on the team, his energy, his enthusiasm, his work ethic, like, he looks like on the screen, like he's joking around, but he edited all those pieces. He put them together. When we worked at the Score together, he would travel the country because we both believed in making sure that we weren't the Toronto Sports Network. I know the reputation that we have in Vancouver. So he was like, okay, we got to travel. How do we travel? And he would literally set up deals on his own with places where he would film in like a club or a bar to get the trip paid for and then go talk to the Canucks and then go talk to the Calgary Flames or the Edmonton Oilers. Like, the hustle was real back in the day. And I don't know how many people actually recognize that that's what he was doing when he was filming in the clubs as Cabby on the street way back in the day.
Well, those of us who've been in the business for a while, if you know, you know. And as fun as it looks, you're right. There's a lot of work that goes into that. Obviously, you guys assembled a great deal of talent. I don't need to go down a whole Score rabbit hole today. Maybe we'll save that for a future episode of this conversation. But, Tim, the other thing that strikes me is that you guys were allowed to create, that you were given a blank canvas and said, you're going to fail a bunch of times, but give her. And that doesn't happen at every place. You know, we get a lot of listeners. There are viewers that probably hit you up on social media and say, oh, why don't you guys try this? And I'm not talking about where you are currently, but you've worked in operations where you don't have that latitude.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I just think, I'll say right now, like, Sportsnet doesn't have that kind of latitude that we had at the Score. They expect so much more from anyone stepping in. And for me, like, I would open, like, if you gave me the opportunity, and I think we can see it a little bit on Tim and Friends, where we're giving people who haven't been on national TV a whole bunch the opportunity to sit on a round table or come on as a guest and things like that. I think you need to do way more of that. I think you need to throw as much poop at the wall and see what sticks, because you never really know. And I think the Score was a great example of that. And it ended up pretty, like, you know, listen, I got on air when I wasn't ready to be on air on the Score. And if you were watching around that time, you would probably agree with me. But we got, and we got opportunities, and because of it, you know, Cabby was down in the States for a while, made his mark at TSN. Adnan Virk, you know, had hit the highest of the highs on ESPN doing college football, and now works for MLB Network. You know, Renee Paquette turned into Renee Young. There's just Martin Geyer, James Cebulski, like, roll through it. There was a lot of talent there, and it was because they were given opportunities. So I believe in just giving folks opportunities.
What happened to that Sid guy you used to work with?
I don't know. Someone told me he's working on a morning show somewhere.
I'll look into it. We'll get our crack staff. Tim McAuliffe joining us here as I turn things over to Jamie Dodd for some real sports talk in this segment.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, shout out to getting on air before you're ready to get on air. I can appreciate that one, Tim. So I love to hear it. Any place that'll do that, I'm all about it.
We all can.
I disagree. Yeah, it's true. We all can. And I disagree with it in your case, if you were making that reference.
Well, I appreciate it.
You were the one that gave me the chuckles per 60. So I'm good with that. Any athlete
that
gives me the chuckles per 60.
That's right. I'm going to be living off that one for a while, I think, Tim. But, like, I guess we should get into some actual sports talk.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays, what happened? They lost. They got shut out last night. Are you ready to tear the bandwagon down and call for Charlie Montoyo's head now?
No, you know what's funny is yesterday I started the show with some very thoughtful quote that I stole, I think, off of the Calm app, which was the best thing to do when it's raining is to let it rain. And I meant it in all Jays fans' cases. Like, this is an unbelievable run. Please enjoy it. But by no means did it guarantee you a playoff spot. Like, there's still baseball to be played. And this is honestly why I sometimes enjoy the pennant race, or in this case, the wild card race, more than the playoffs. Because what we're getting here is basically like 20 games of playoffs. Like, it could be that close down the wire. And just because the Jays reeled off an unbelievable run doesn't mean they're making the playoffs. It gave them a little more leeway when it comes to these last, you know, couple weeks here. But by no means did it guarantee anything. That said, losing 2-0 to a Tampa team that's really damn good, like 90 wins good already. I think it's 90-55 the Rays are right now. Like, this is a really good team that they are facing. And I think losing to this is a big game today, and it's an afternoon affair in Toronto. And we're going to come on out of it on Tim and Friends, but people are going to be watching the Red Sox game, and people are going to be watching the Yankees game too. So, like, this is what we're in for, and let it rain, man. I'm all for this. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been great, especially the last couple of nights, having, you know, the doubleheader with the Jays playing the Rays, and then the late game, or, you know, 7 o'clock out here,
yep,
with the Red Sox in Seattle, has been fantastic. You know, you make a great point about, okay, you look at how the race is setting up here. The Jays, the Yankees, the Red Sox, all basically tied, fighting for two spots. You're in this race with two of the kind of traditional powerhouses, your hated rivals. It really couldn't set up much better. And look, I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm dialed in for the most part, you know, 162 games a year. But I don't know if there's any sport that has a bigger gap between kind of the dog days of the regular season and the final stretch of the playoff race. Because really, I mean, every game, not just for your team, but for the other teams too, is basically appointment viewing at this point.
Without a doubt. And that's what separates baseball. And once you come to appreciate that, I think it takes your, like, baseball fandom to a new level. Like, and it doesn't happen every year. Like, this is the crazy part of it. Like, it'll happen somewhere in the bigs, but when your team, or there's a vested interest, and listen, Seattle's in and around there, and I know that there are fans of the Mariners in Vancouver too. When your team's in and around something like this, it's the best. Every game means something. You need their, every pitch means something. Moving that runner over means something. It almost turns into a little bit of a different game. And my beef with, you know, best of fives in baseball is you don't necessarily get that. Best of sevens, you're still stretching it. We get this for a 20-game span, and it is, even if you're not a baseball fan, I implore you, just tune in, especially if you get a good crowd in a stadium that understands what's going on here. You can kind of get lost in the nuance of the game, and that's what makes baseball special.
Yeah, it's fun right now. Tim McAuliffe joining us, as he does every single Wednesday. Jamie mentioned the name Charlie Montoyo, and I wonder if there's a Ned Yost conversation here. I don't know what the Blue Jays are going to do this postseason, but I think there is something to it. Last night they lose. Well, why didn't you pinch hit this guy? Why were you using that guy in this situation? I feel like if the Blue Jays win, many will view it in spite of Charlie Montoyo. If they lose, it's going to be because of that, a fair assessment.
Never, but it is always the case in baseball. There are so many decisions that are made along the way. I mean, Kevin Cash is widely regarded as one of the best managers in all of baseball, is he not? And last year he got absolutely roasted for his and may have lost a pitcher for his decision to take out Blake Snell dealing. And I think that when it's your team, you kind of have the blinders on. And I understand it, but make no mistake, Charlie Montoyo is not making those decisions in of himself. The new age baseball manager has a book, and he knows what management wants him to do as well. And he's constantly playing that balance of what my gut tells me and what the book tells me and what I'm going to do in this moment. And Charlie Montoyo was also hired not to take this team to the World Series, but to take this team from young, hype-ridden squad, bouncing in actuality, bouncing around all of North America with their home, and keep it positive and keep it fresh so that they weren't ruined before they got good. And they got good quicker than most people thought that they would. And so to me, when you're doing all of that, like when you're putting all that together, Charlie Montoyo has done a great job. But if you're talking about every day, change the pitcher, pinch hit here, there are mistakes that Montoyo has made. I don't know if he's made them with full autonomy, but he will be held to that, just as Kevin Cash was, just as Joe Torre was. Every manager in baseball history has been plagued by, if the decision doesn't work, it's more glaring in their sport than almost every other. Like, think about, like, you, every pinch hit, every substitution of a pitcher, every call of a bullpen, that's like a fourth down conversion or a third down conversion in the CFL. And you get them, like, now 4 or 5 times a game, 6 times a game. If there were that many decisions to be made on the football field, you'd see a lot more football coaches, you know, getting fired for those decisions. But it just happens a lot in baseball.
Well, I won't take you to football coaches. I'll go hockey coaches instead. You mentioned pressure. There's a lot of pressure in Western Canada this season. I want to see where your barometer takes you. Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton. Which organization do you believe has the most pressure this season?
Okay, let me just say, almost every Canadian team has, it feels like, an inordinate amount of pressure on them. The Habs, even after going to a cup final, have a lot of pressure given what happened in the offseason. The Leafs, of course. Leafs. I'd say the Edmonton Oilers are the answer to that, and it was Connor's comments yesterday that put me at that point. And listen, I think there's a lot of pressure on Tree Living in Calgary. I think Jim Benning has lived under pressure in Vancouver, and it's time for, I feel like, Vancouver to take the next step. I also feel like the Pacific Division might give an opportunity for Calgary and Vancouver to take those steps. In Edmonton, it's not just a step. They need to get to another level. And Connor McDavid saying, like, it's now. It's not future. It's not, like, I wonder, and maybe you guys could, there's been a lot of pushback in Edmonton about, oh, Connor will leave. Why is this always Connor will leave? For the first time, when he says, it's now, I thought, what happens if it isn't? Is this was that the opening salvo to, if it doesn't work, Connor leaves? And for that, I believe that the most pressure is in Edmonton, Scotty.
Interesting, because I think that's the storyline next season. I don't get the sense he's out. I get the sense the coaching move would be made first there, but maybe we see it differently.
I mean, how many coaching moves do you get? How many GM moves do you get? Like, you know, I thought Todd McClellan was an answer. Do you disagree it's Edmonton? Because I think there's pressure a little out of places. But, man, I just – when I looked at Connor McDavid making a statement, because I don't see Connor McDavid make a lot of statements, it shook me a little bit. I was like, this feels a little bit different to me, and I wonder if that's not the opening salvo. Maybe I'm wrong on my timing, and I'll accept that, or maybe I'm just wrong, period. But it got me thinking. There is absolutely no doubt that it got me thinking, unlike I would have if he had just gone out there and said to Connor McDavid-like things, like, we're going to go out there and try really hard and the opportunities in front of us. And I like the additions of Zach Hyman or Heinze or whatever the hell he called them, because he's a hockey player. and Nursey and Dunkey. And, you know, they made some changes. I don't know how much better they are this time around. And that, like, that, to me, feels like a powder keg if they don't get something done this year.
It's the kind of question, Tim, where we're looking at these three teams, it almost doesn't feel like there's a wrong answer, because you start talking about any of them and you can see, you know, as you say, how things would turn out really poorly and how big changes would need to be made. You know, I think I said Vancouver was under the most pressure. Maybe that's just because I live here or whatever reason. But I just look at the general managers in all three cases. I feel like Ken Holland, because he's Ken Holland and he has that track record and he hasn't been there that long yet,
I feel like
he can survive a bad year. I don't see how Jim Benning can survive a bad year, given everything that's happened in his tenure, the temperature the market was at different points last year. It just feels like truly it is this year or bust for Benning.
I mean, the signing of Elias Pettersson kind of hangs over any conversation that we're going to have about Vancouver and how you get this young talent nailed in, as Kyle Dubas struggled with and still struggles with to this day. So I feel like, yes, there is always going to be that pressure, but I also feel like, and I know that Vancouver is historically impatient to be nice about it, but don't you feel like the team's trajectory is going in the right direction? Like, I feel like you've got good young talent in that city that eventually will find a way to be better. Like, there's no, oh, I wish we had, you know, you have a lot of the pieces that you need, and now it's just getting a way to put it all together. And obviously, fitting the pieces in financially has become a huge part of what the NHL is. But I feel like Vancouver's on the right trajectory, and I'm maybe because I can say that and then say at the end of the year, well, I'm waiting for the breakthrough, and you guys are like, well, the breakthrough hasn't come through. Like, we haven't seen that breakthrough. There needs to be some sort of breakthrough. And I think this year, given what's in that Pacific Division, you're going to see that breakthrough.
Well, and I think the difference, again, on the pressure conversation between Vancouver and Calgary, you're right. Vancouver has pieces in place that you still think you can build on. Even if things don't go well this year, you still look at Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko as building blocks for a team. You just might need somebody else to put the other pieces in around those building blocks. Whereas I look at Calgary, and if things don't go well for Calgary this year, you know, you're not just talking about changing the coach and the general manager. You're talking about potentially a full rebuild there, which you're not looking at in Vancouver.
Blow it up like you knew they would. Call the crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. Like, just quote Biggie. And I thought we were going to get there after last year. I understand the ramifications of Calgary, and I think that if you were to ask me to rank, I would say Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver. I just know the fan base that I'm talking to in Vancouver, and it's hard to tell them or tell you guys, be a little bit more patient. I think you've got more pieces than anybody else, because frankly, they saw those pieces in other places, maybe even specifically Toronto, and said, yeah, there were pieces there and they haven't got out of the first round. What the hell does that mean? You just want it to happen. And, you know, I think the Pacific Division is going to give a real opportunity here. And Vancouver might be right there when all is said and done, depending on how the signings go.
Well, and Calgary's an interesting situation. And I understand why there's frustration from our listeners, because obviously we're broadcasting both markets when they see the article from Eric Francis yesterday, which is Brad for Living basically saying, we wanted to do something, but we couldn't find deals that made sense. It's not like the Leafs who came out and said, we're going to run it back. You can agree or disagree, but this is what we're doing. It was Trey Living saying, well, we didn't necessarily want to run it back, but it looks like we're going to have to run it back.
But that was, and so why can't we come to the, why can't we come to this conclusion on our own? And it, like, if I do it from Toronto, I'll get killed. From especially the Western provinces, where people are so invested into their team and love their team at such a high level that I enjoy it thoroughly. But, like, isn't that the truth? Like, isn't the truth that not a lot of people want to play in Edmonton? Maybe a few more want to play in Calgary. Like, there are still struggles. Like, the Toronto Raptors can't get anybody. Like, that still hasn't been settled. This playing in Canada, for whatever reason, whether it's whether it's taxes or beyond, there seems to, whether it's pressure, whether it's anonymity, whether it's the lack of golf courses or Wi-Fi in Winnipeg, like, let's call it as we see it. It's harder. You think Zach Hyman got as much money as he got in Edmonton because that's the player? Or Darnell Nurse? No, they got an extra million to play in Edmonton, didn't they?
That's fair, Tim, but here's the other thing. When you work in the hockey markets that these are, and you are a general manager of a team, people hold you accountable to your words. When Kyle Dubas came out and said, we can and we will, well, that was what people held him to. And when Brad Treliving came out a few months ago and said, we have to change, we have to change, and then comes back and says, we tried, but we couldn't, you understand the frustration.
No, I completely understand the frustration, but I also know that there's some reality in it, in that if no one wants to come to your franchise, that's partly your fault, right? Completely. Masai Ujiri is having the same problem. Like, there's something right now happening with small market teams that unless you draft the guy and you cultivate him, it's really hard to get people to play in these smaller markets. And I think you can throw – Toronto's not a small market. Vancouver shouldn't be a small market. Montreal's not a small market. But, like, name me all those free agents they're attracting without, you know, kind of sort of – did the Leafs overpay for John Tavares?
No, they didn't spend much on that, did they? They were like, you already bought the pajamas. We don't need to pay you much, do we?
So all I'm saying is, like, let's just interject the reality of it as well as holding Brad Treliving accountable for what's going on in Calgary, and he will be held accountable. I firmly believe that. But when Eric Francis' story came out, there was a – was there not, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, and honestly, I'm asking, was there not a little like, yeah, duh, that's why we're in this spot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I absolutely agree. 100%.
Yeah. And so that's like, to me, there's the balance, and absolutely you will be held accountable. But, you know, that's why the Johnny Gaudreau rumor has been out there for 2.5 years, right? That's why the, going to move on from Sean Monahan, right? Like, you're trading at a low point, and that to me, it's similar to you know, a story heard 5,000 times in all of sports is when you come off a crappy year and your team underperforms and the fans all want the players to be traded, and it's not that simple. That's when you get fleeced. That's when you knee jerk and Taylor Hall for Adam Larson, although I don't think that was as bad in hindsight as people made it out to be. But that's when the knee-jerk trade happens, and the hindsight goes from 20-20 to 50-50.
Losing Adam Larson to Seattle was the one that hurt more than anything. Hey, Tim, good stuff, buddy.
Oh, my God, that is so true. They got blindsided by that one, switched everything. I agree. Be well. Thank you. I'll stop talking now.
No, thank you. We appreciate your time, man. We could do this all day, but you got a show to prep for after the Jays take on the Rays in the rubber match today. Thank you.
Thank you, boys.